Triple H, The Rock says, we seem to have developed a little pattern here. And that pattern is that every single week you come out here and you run your mouth. And every single week you subject all of us to watch you stand in the middle of the ring, grab a microphone, and you say this. Tonight, I am the game, and in this very ring, for the next 20 minutes,
is he constipated?
I'm going to be talking, and saying absolutely nothing.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You said you haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 365 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, January 25th, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast here this week. You can listen to the show in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, lots of different ways. We have a free app in the Google Play Store for those of you with Android devices. And this was actually a big week for the Sound Off. I got to lead off with this and thank everybody who has been streaming the show in Stitcher. The Sound Off was in the top five of all shows on all of Stitcher Radio this past week. So all shows of any kind of the thousands of shows they have. And the Sound Off, for the first time, was in the top five. We also were number one on the sports charts, so a big thank you to everybody who has been streaming us in Stitcher. Keep streaming us on there, whether you listen to the full show that way, if you get part of the show, you listen to only a few minutes each week. Every little bit helps as far as our rankings on Stitcher, and this was our biggest week yet, cracking the top five and being number one in sports. So thank you very much for that. The Wrestling Soup collaboration this past week on Tuesday night was a smashing success. The response was overwhelming. They had tons of live listeners for the show on Tuesday. 132 missed calls, so there were a lot of people that we weren't able to get to. A lot of people. I would say, 98% of the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. It was a lot of fun to hang out with those guys, with Missionary and Joey. So I'm sure we'll do it again down the road in the future. If you missed the show, it is archived. You can go on WrestlingSoup.com. There's a little bonus audio also on their YouTube channel from the post show. So a lot of good stuff there. Big thank you to those guys for having me on. It was a huge success. I also enjoyed my time with Bruce Hart on Heartbeat Radio Thursday night. That's also archived on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse channel, I believe, on Blog Talk Radio. We talked for almost an hour and a half, just shooting the shit about the Royal Rumble and, just current events in WWE and wrestling in general. And Bruce, of course, has been part of the wrestling business for decades now, one of the members of the Hart family. So big things going on so far in 2015. We got a lot of Royal Rumble stuff to get into, Raw Reunion, ton of different stuff. But before we do, Audible. Audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. That's our custom URL. A lot of you guys have been using it. And for those of you who have not yet cashed in your free audiobook, let me tell you a little bit something about this. Because if you use our URLs, if you punch in audibletrial.com/Solid Monster, get your mom to do it, your friends, whoever you think may be interested in listening to an audiobook, if they're a big reader, although you don't have to be a big reader, I guess, since it's an audiobook. Use our URL because it's a great offer. You can sign up free for 30 days. You get to sample the service. As part of your subscription, you get one free audio book. The best part about the whole thing is whether you stick with Audible beyond the 30 days or not, that book belongs to you. It's yours. It's got your imprint on it. You get to keep it no matter what. They've got tons of wrestling books on there. I've talked about this before. The new Chris Jericho book is on there. Hulk Hogan has his book on there, which he narrates himself. Stone Cold's book, Terry Funk, Brock Lesnar, Lex Luger, tons of other books, and non-wrestling books. So you get a free book. There's nothing to lose here. Audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. Punch in that URL. It'll take you to the main page. You then have to go from there and actually sign up. Once you put the URL in, it kind of registers our code, but you then have to go through the sign-up process. So please use our URL if you think you might be interested in that. A lot of people made PayPal donations this week, so I have to say thank you for that. You can do so on thesolemonster.com. The PayPal donation box is on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname like these fine folks. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Psychotic Sean Barba, Short Fuse Sean Simpson, the Australian Ass Kicker Anthony Patty, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Terrifying Terrence Hickman, Ostentatious Alan Carter, there's a word for you. Just Try Me, Travis McCoy. I'm not going to mess with that guy. Ladies Man, Levi Daly. Guilty as Charged, Mark Court. Eugene, Crazy Eyes, Morgan. Out of Control, Cody Thomas, the Master of the Mat, Jonathan Negrau. Deadpool, James Herrera. The Brisbane Baller, that's what I'm calling this guy. The Brisbane Baller, Omar Youssef. And Corey Released the Kraken Krause. How's that? I tell you what, I like some of these names more than some of those NXT guys, well, certainly the NXT guys from a few years ago. So if you want a wrestling nickname or just want to make a donation and show your support for the show, thesolemonster.com is the place to go. You'll see the PayPal box there. Every little bit helps. And thank you. No matter how big or small of a donation you may make, just know that I appreciate it greatly. Also, we have new shirts up in our store, prowrestlingtees.com. We were one of the top-selling, if not the top-selling, podcast/YouTube show store on all of Pro Wrestling Tees in 2014, which is pretty impressive given that we only opened our store in September. So the store was only open last year for all of 3.5 months. But that was all because of you guys. So far this year, we've got 3 new shirts up so far. There's a 4th one coming any day now. One shirt is the Rocket Science shirt. Okay, it's not Rocket Science, people. There's 2 different versions of that shirt. One on a black shirt, one on a sport gray t-shirt, if you prefer that. And the brand new shirt that went up this week is the Hello, I'm Shitty the Announcer name tag t-shirt. Now, you may remember on that faithful episode of Raw where they had Grumpy the Cat. See, now I'm calling him Grumpy the Cat now. Grumpy Cat. Michael Cole referred to Grumpy Cat as Grumpy the Cat. And then in some off-the-cuff remark, I said, yeah, well, you're Shitty the Announcer. And then, poof, it just took off from there. And a lot of you guys were saying, oh, I'd love a shirt like that. Well, now you got one. You can get your own personal Shitty the Announcer t-shirt right now in our store. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solemonster Sounds Off. It's the full name of the show. Again, we have another shirt coming up any day now that I think is very appropriate. So that's another way to show your support for the show. Head on over there. We got 14, soon to be 15 shirts up right now with more to come. Hopefully you will find one that you like. Thank you to everybody who voted for us as Show of the Year in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. We were one of 6 finalists that made that final cut. Some stiff competition in there. I believe the Busted Open guys have won the last 2 years in a row, but this was also the first time that these awards were brought to my attention, and the Sound Off Army was able to make their voices heard. So we'll see what happens. Voting is now closed. The winner will be announced this Friday. So we'll find out then. Now, one last thing to get to here. Some house cleaning, and then I promise you we'll get into the Rumble here. One other awards note. I wanted to talk a little bit here about the 10th Annual Podcast Awards on podcastawards.com. It's a very easy website to remember. They've got a ceremony coming up in Vegas in April to announce the winners. This is, you know, kind of a big deal. Right now, they are in nomination mode. And you can help nominate the Solemonster Sounds Off in the sports category for Best Sports Show of the Year. All you have to do is go to the website. You'll see the full ballot on podcastawards.com. Scroll down to the sports category. You can also vote for us if you want to under the People's Choice category, I believe. You're only allowed one category, but I think People's Choice, you can include that one as well. That's up to you. Just fill in the full name of the podcast, Solemonster Sounds Off, and put our URL in there. The URL is thesolemonster.com. Scroll down to the bottom. They'll ask you for your name, for your email address. This is important because a few days after, you may get a confirmation email asking you just to confirm your vote is legit. Voting is open through February 2nd, so there's a little bit of time left. You can only vote once, so make that first ballot, that nomination ballot, count. Because you can only do it one time. And just, you know, take 2 minutes out of your day and help nominate the Sound Off. With these things, win or lose, obviously you want to win, but win or lose, the key here to this whole thing is just to have enough support to be nominated is a big deal because it helps spread awareness of the show. to people who may not otherwise have heard of the show before. These are not wrestling awards. These are just overall podcast awards. So I'd love to spread awareness of the show to other people as well. This is a great way to do it. So just head on over to podcastawards.com for that. Now, the Royal Rumble tonight on the WWE Network. I got to tell you, I'm pumped for the Rumble. Rumble is one of my favorite shows all year. I can't remember the last really great Rumble match. It's been many years. They're definitely hit or miss. But still, heading into the Rumble, I always get excited. You know, it goes back to when I was a kid. The Rumble was always my favorite event, and that really hasn't changed much. So the show is tonight in Philadelphia. First off, big thank you to Zach House of Pain Hulker on our Facebook group for putting so much time and effort into organizing our second annual Royal Rumble pool on the Facebook group page. The response was overwhelming. I think it was more than double, maybe triple at this point, the response from last year. I know as of earlier in the week, when he announced the numbers that we all drew, it was about 360 participants, I think, that have spread out over several pools. And since then, I mean, that number's got to be over 400, maybe closer to 500 by now. So a ton of people have participated. All I know is I drew number 30. Lucky me, I drew number 30 in the pool. Now, two men have won the Royal Rumble from the number 30 spot before, actually in back-to-back years. The Undertaker in 2007 and John Cena, who was a surprise in Madison Square Garden in 2008. So hopefully this year, number 30 turns out to be Daniel Bryan or Roman Reigns and not Ryback, which I think is what I drew last year. I think I had number 26. I got Ryback. That was at a time when he was doing the tag team thing with Curtis Axel. And I just remember Ryback coming out and thinking to myself, fuck, didn't work out too well for me. So I got number 30. Hopefully things will be better this year. Speaking of 30, 30 men in the Royal Rumble match. The winner will go on to wrestle for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania 31. Already announced, all the key people are in there. I don't have to go through the whole list. Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, Rusev, Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, Big Show, Kane. So all the key people are in there. And, as far as who's going to win, I like the idea that there are two very realistic possibilities. I still think it's going to be one of two people. It's going to be Roman Reigns or it's going to be Daniel Bryan. Could it be somebody else like a Dean Ambrose or a Dolph Ziggler? Yes, it's possible. Anything is possible, especially if they're looking to shock you. So never say never, but realistically, we're looking at two guys here. My head says Roman Reigns. My heart says Daniel Bryan. I want to see Bryan win. I think it would make more sense, and it would tell a great story if Bryan won and went back to the Mania main event this year. But I got to go with my head. My head tells me Roman Reigns, and I think that's the plan. I don't think they're deviating from that plan this year, and so I think Roman Reigns is going to win the Royal Rumble. As a dark horse pick, so somebody who I don't realistically think will win, but if I had to pick a number two, he would be my guy, Dean Ambrose. I'm going with Dean Ambrose as my dark horse pick here. Bully Ray, I made the comment when I did my predictions for 2015 earlier this year that Bully Ray would come back as a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble. I'm going to stick to that. I still think there's a better than decent shot that we end up seeing him turn up in the Rumble match tonight. Look, two of my predictions for 2015 have already come true. I said Daniel Bryan was going to come back from his injury and make it back in time for Mania, which he did. And I said that NXT was going to start touring outside of Florida, which they've already started to do. In fact, their first event outside the state just sold out. So I'd say that's a pretty good sign. I see that The Rock posted a photo on Twitter last night of him in Philadelphia, so The Rock happens to be in the same city as the Royal Rumble. Could he make an appearance in the Rumble? Not even in the Rumble match, just make an appearance on the pay-per-view. It's possible. Look, last time he teased being in the same city as WWE, he posted a photo like working out at some gym in Manhattan. It was the same day that Raw happened to be in Brooklyn. And lo and behold, The Rock made a surprise appearance that wasn't a huge surprise to me on Raw in Brooklyn. So he's done this before, and he did have that little run-in with Rusev on that show. So you never know. I don't think he's winning or anything, but could he be there? Yeah, he could be there. Absolutely. Look, he's not in Philadelphia by accident. Let's put it that way. But let me just go back really quickly to Roman Reigns here before we move on to the championship match. I want to make this comment here. Now, I know there's a lot of Roman Reigns hate out there. I said that I would prefer Daniel Bryan win instead of Roman Reigns because I just think it would be a better story, and Bryan never really was beaten for the championship, and I'm just dying to see Bryan and Brock Lesnar. That's kind of my dream match for WrestleMania this year. But I see this movement online and Twitter accounts set up to, like, reject Reigns, and it's like this concerted effort, like, you know, the Raw, let's boycott Raw from last year, that whole deal, where they're going to show up and boo Roman Reigns out of the building. Let's all, like, in a unified movement, show up in Philadelphia tonight and boo Roman Reigns out of the building. This whole thing, to me, is stupid. Just like that hijack Raw shit last year was the dumbest thing ever, and boy, was that a success, too. Hijack Raw. Let's hijack Raw. That was stupid, and this is even dumber. Roman Reigns may get booed out of the building tonight anyway. Look, they're in Philadelphia. You never know how a crowd like that in one of these major cities that have this hardcore fan base, you never know how they're going to react. Look what happened to Batista last year, okay? They fucking booed Rey Mysterio, who came out at number 30. Rey didn't do anything wrong. We could have a repeat situation this year. Or we may not. You know, Roman Reigns will come out any given week on Raw, depending on what city they're in. He still gets a monster reaction, you know, as he's coming through the crowd. It's not like he's been getting booed every single week. I would not, you know, say that Roman Reigns is definitely going to get an overwhelmingly negative response tonight. He might. But if he does, it's going to be in spite of these idiots online who are trying to organize this movement. I don't understand what the issue is here. You know, it's not Roman Reigns' fault. WWE is the ones who book the stories. They pick and choose who goes over and who doesn't. I don't hold Roman Reigns responsible for that. I really don't have a problem with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is going to be the guy, whether it's this year or next year. So get used to it, people. Whether you like it or not, it's happening. You better get used to it. But I wouldn't show up with some effort. Let's boo this guy out of the building. Like, to me, the whole thing is just fucking dumb. It's stupid. So I just had to make that comment. I hope Roman Reigns comes out and gets a monster reaction tonight. So then it'll be egg on all these people's faces. What are they going to do with themselves if Roman Reigns comes out and gets the biggest reaction of the night? I just think the whole thing is dumb. We have the triple threat match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Brock Lesnar, John Cena, and Seth Rollins. I made the prediction weeks ago, before Rollins was even added to this match, that John Cena was going to win. I had a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. They were building this thing up as the final encounter between Cena and Lesnar, you know, which we've seen a gazillion times by now. But that first match at SummerSlam, forget the Extreme Rules match a couple of years ago, that first match at SummerSlam where Lesnar just completely dominated Cena, it was a one-sided ass-kicking, you know, the likes of which we've never seen before in a pay-per-view main event. With a top guy. I certainly have never seen that before. So then they come back the next month. Cena had the match won. He got screwed out of it. Now this was going to be the rubber match. I can't see Cena being dominated again, right? So the only thing that made sense to me was either they have somebody interfere to cost Cena the match, and that leads to Cena's program at WrestleMania, maybe someone like Rusev, or Cena's going to win because they're not having Brock dominate him again. But then they went and they added Rollins to the match. So I'm going to stick with my prediction. I still have this feeling that John Cena somehow is going to win the championship. Maybe not leave with it, but he's going to win the championship. He'll probably leave with it. Interestingly enough, you know, if he wins the title tonight, if I'm right, that's going to be number 16. And they haven't mentioned that on television at all, which maybe you could take that as a sign that it's not going to happen, because if it was, they would make a big deal about it. You know, he's going to tie Ric Flair's record. If he wins the title tonight, he does. He ties Ric Flair's famed 16 title reigns as world champion if that happens. Here's the thing with Brock Lesnar, though, and we'll talk about Raw in a second. We all saw what happened on Monday night. It was the first sign of babyface Brock Lesnar since he came back in 2012 to WWE, and I loved the shit out of it. But the more I think about this, I don't want Brock Lesnar as a babyface, not yet, because that would kill the chances of a match with Daniel Bryan. And that's still the match that I'm looking for. They could do Lesnar and Bryan in any sort of way that they want to. It doesn't even have to be for the title. I still think the best scenario is heel Brock Lesnar defending the championship against, you know, little Daniel Bryan, who goes into the match as the underdog. If Brock is a babyface, I don't think he is, by the way. Everybody is just assuming, based on what we saw Monday night, oh, they turned him, he's a babyface. I didn't see a turn at all. I just saw, you know, in the build-up to this match, where it's every man for himself in this three-way match, there's no alliance anymore. It's not like Brock and Seth are going to be working together. They were establishing that. They were establishing the fact that Brock is out to kill everybody in his path, whether they're with the authority or not. I didn't really look at that as a full-on babyface turn. And while I love the idea of babyface killer Brock Lesnar, I don't want to see it now because, like I said, I think it just completely kills the chances of a match with Bryant. So that's my take on that. I'm sticking with Cena. We have the Usos defending the tag team titles against Miz and Mizdow. I'm going with the Usos. I see them furthering this split, the animosity between Miz and Mizdow. The Ascension against the New Age Outlaws. Wendell on our Facebook page earlier this week brought up the fact that, you know, the Outlaws beat the Rhodes Brothers last year, won the tag team belts, and then they wrestled the Usos a couple of different times, so it's possible that the Outlaws could win. And anything is possible. Anything is possible, but the difference is they don't have the belts this time. Okay, when they had that whole thing with they put the belts on them so they could put the Usos over, which is exactly what they did. And after their match with the Shield at WrestleMania, we never saw the Outlaws again. So they brought them back last year, maybe to give them one last token run with the belts, but it was really to help put over the new team, which was the Usos. Well, here they are against a brand new team that needs all the help they can get. The Ascension is just drowning. They are drowning. And a lot of it is not just the writer's fault and the booker or whoever is putting this whole thing together, because they're just not that good. But they need all the help they can get right now. And that's why they brought the Outlaws back. I don't see the point in having the Outlaws beat them at all on this show, especially coming off the embarrassment that they had to suffer on Raw last Monday night. They need a win, and they need a big win here. And I think it's pretty obvious that the Ascension is going over, because if they don't, then I just don't know. You know, I just don't know what they're doing. They need that big win now, and then they could trot out more legends every single week for them to beat up if they want to. But the only outcome here that makes sense is the Ascension going over. The Bella Twins in a tag team match against Paige and Natalya. I'll go with the Bella Twins here. I love Paige, but Bellas are going to win. Adam Rose and Tyson Kidd and Cesaro against The New Day is the pre-show match. It's an elimination-style match. I figure The New Day goes over here, since Tyson Kidd and Cesaro just do nothing but lose every week on TV. So New Day is my pick, and I think that's the whole card. I don't think... Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter, and I forgot who it was. I'm sorry, but I don't think there's a single one-on-one match on this pay-per-view. It's like... I think they said it's like the WrestleMania 2000 of Royal Rumbles. Which, in fairness, I've made that comment before. Somebody pointed out to me that at WrestleMania 2000, there actually was a singles match. I think it was The Cat against, I forgot who. It was like a women's match. I completely forgot about that because it was, I mean, let's be honest here. It was The Cat in a women's match. Who cares? Every other match on that show was some kind of tag team, multi-man bullshit. But yes, technically there was, in fact, a singles match. I believe it was a singles match at WrestleMania 2000. But anyway... That's the whole card, unless I'm missing something. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster, because I will be doing a Royal Rumble Extra review on Monday, and that'll be exclusive to YouTube. So if you want to hear my thoughts and don't want to wait until next weekend, that will be the place to find it. And before we get into Raw, I just want to comment on this story first. This ties into WWE. It is related. You may have heard the story. It got picked up by the Associated Press this week. Two former WWE talents... Big Vito LaGrasso, and a developmental guy by the name of Adam Mercer. I think that was his name in NXT. His real name is Evan Singleton. They sued WWE this week in federal court, making claims that the company, basically there was a neglect on the part of the company to injuries that they had suffered, and now they suffer from symptoms of concussions and just all of these horrific injuries that they blame on WWE basically sweeping them under the rug. That's their claim. Now, in the case of this Adam Mercer guy, he says he suffered numerous subconcussive blows to the head and that WWE downplayed the seriousness of his head injuries and discouraged him from seeking medical help. He says that he has suffered a serious head injury in a match with Eric Rowan. I can believe that. WWE, though, cleared him to continue wrestling after inadequate rest time. That's what he claims. He says he suffered convulsions, migraines, memory loss, and many months later, it came to light that he had suffered internal bleeding on the left side of his brain, and he went to a doctor, and that doctor deemed him to be completely disabled. Now, this is a young guy. He's in his early 20s. And supposedly, this doctor said, well, you're completely disabled now. Now, I don't know, you know, as far as the, you know, he says he suffered a blow in a match with Eric Rowan. WWE basically ignored it, or they said, oh, it's not a big deal. It's possible that may have happened. And if the guy is legitimately disabled and he's got these horrific injuries that stem from that, then there could be a case there. Where I have a problem, and the reason I bring this up, I get to Big Vito. Okay, Big Vito was in WWE. Remember, he wore a dress. That's probably what he's most well known for in his time in WWE. He claims that he wrestled while seriously hurt many times under the threat of loss of future opportunities. So basically, you either wrestle or you lose your job. That's the implication. He says WWE took no steps to protect him and never warned him. This is what I love. They never warned Vito about the risks of sustaining numerous subconcussive and concussive blows to the head. And he says that as a result, he suffers from serious neurological damage, severe headaches, memory loss, depression, all of these different issues. There's two things here. Number one, I don't want to hear that if you were sustaining blows to the head, but which is by the very nature what pro wrestlers do. You take a bump, a normal bump. Forgot who it was. I want to say it was Test, sometime before he died. But somebody was talking about just taking like a normal body slam, for example. A basic wrestling bump is like the equivalent of being in a head-on collision at like 25 or 30 miles an hour in a car. Okay, that these guys go through this every single night. It's the nature of what they do. And you go back to when Big Vito was wrestling in the WCW days in the late 90s, and even in the WWE days in the mid-2000s when you still had chair shots to the head, and you know, you're bashing each other in the head with garbage can. Wasn't he in the hardcore division? I think in WCW, he may have been. So that's the style that he was wrestling. This notion that, well, we didn't know. We didn't know, even in the late 90s. I mean, forget that. The late 90s, 2005, 2007. Well, we didn't know. Until Chris Nowinski and his institute came along and the stuff with Benoit happened. Who knew? Who knew that being bashed in the head and taking bumps on your head was going to be bad for your health? Give me a break. You don't have to be a genius to know that that's probably a bad idea. And it's not as though somebody forced him to be a professional wrestler. Now, here's the other thing, okay? How does somebody who made his wrestling debut in 1990 and spent all of maybe 4 years, and I'm being generous when I say that, because his real run in WWE went from 2005 to 2007. But he did, you know, he was a job guy here and there for WWF in the 90s. So let's say all told, between 1990 and 2007-ish, he spent all of maybe 4 years working for WWE. How does somebody like that then turn around and sue WWE for his concussion problems, claiming to have worked there? This is the kicker. He claims to have worked there for nearly a decade. That's some of that fuzzy wrestling math. Nearly a decade. He worked for WWE. And he's still taking indie dates. And he's running a wrestling school. But as far as I know, I think he's still wrestling. I think he's still taking indie dates. It's hilarious. It really is. You can, honestly, you can sue for anything these days. If somebody looks at you cockeyed, you can file a lawsuit against them. It's crazy. And I love you, Bill. Bill Mitchell is one of our longtime listeners. I think I kind of refer to him as the professor. And he chimed in on this on Facebook and says he hopes they, you know, bleed WWE dry of every penny because they've been pulling this stuff for years. And if nothing else, it's payback for this independent contractor nonsense, okay? One does not have anything to do with the other. I think WWE should be raked over the coals for that independent contractor farce. Because it's complete bullshit that their talent is classified as independent contractors when they're clearly not independent contractors. By the very legal definition of what an independent contractor is, they are not. So I agree, they should be raked over the coals for that. That and this have nothing to do with each other. These are two completely separate independent cases. I'm with WWE on this one. This case is going to be thrown out. It's not going to go anywhere, at least as far as Vito. Now, the other guy, I don't know. But when I read the Vito stuff, I just said to myself, are you fucking kidding me? This guy spent a cup of coffee in WWE. He's been wrestling since 1990. He's still taking indie dates. He's running a wrestling school. Oh, my head hurts. I blame WWE. Take a fucking Excedrin. So I think the whole thing is complete bullshit with this guy. I just read that and I shook my head. I said, of all the things that you could sue them for or you can criticize WWE for, there is a guy somewhere out there, and I don't know who he is, who would be a more appropriate face, I'm sure, to this lawsuit. Big Vito is not that guy. Let's talk about Monday Nitro. I mean Raw. Raw reunion. I'm sorry, I was confused there for a minute. When you have a show with Sting, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, The Giant, and the NWO, it's hard to not think you've gone back in time So for everybody who ever wanted a WCW one-night stand, you got your wish on Monday night. I will say, looking back, there was more to like than not to like on this show, which is kind of a role reversal for Raw on most weeks. We got crazy intense Brock Lesnar to open the show. You know, whenever Brock Lesnar comes to the ring and says, "It's business time, baby," you know it's going to be a good night. Reminded me of when Steve Blackman used to come out and say, "It's party time!" Steve Blackman and Brock Lesnar, that's a fight I'd like to see. Brock wanted Seth Rollins, but the Authority came out instead. Brock was just in total babyface mode on this show. And I told you guys, I said Lesnar, if he sticks around long enough, is going to be such a mega babyface. He'd be the new face of the company if he was a full-time guy. I believe that. And, I mean, for as sick and tired as people are of John Cena, can you imagine if Brock Lesnar worked a full-time schedule and did a babyface or a tweener turn and just came out, no nonsense, cut the bullshit, beat the crap out of people? That's how Roman Reigns should be right now. But Roman Reigns will never be looked at the same way as Brock Lesnar. People don't look at Brock Lesnar as being something manufactured or phony or fake or forced down your throat. Brock Lesnar is what he is. He's a badass dude. And I think that that's what people are starving for, but you can't make him the face of the company if he's on his way out, or if he only shows up five times a year. But if he did, he'd be the guy. So, by the end of the show, he was the second most over babyface on the entire roster, after Sting. But I don't see this, like I said earlier, as a face turn like a lot of people do. I just don't see it. I think after tonight, he'll be back as a heel, the arrogant prick heel that he has to be to make really almost any match at Mania work against any of the top babyfaces, whether it's Bryan or whoever. I mean, I suppose if Brock is a face, you know, they could turn him face. Maybe they do a turn with Heyman tonight, and you could do Brock and Rollins or Brock and somebody like that at Mania. I don't see the point, though. If Brock is leaving, and we don't know if he is or not, but if he's gone after Mania, why the hell would you send him into WrestleMania as a babyface against a top heel? You know, are you going to then beat Brock, who's a baby? It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, time-wise, it just doesn't seem like the right time for it. Rollins appeared on the Tron, taunting Brock, talking about putting his legs between his legs. So he must be doing quite a bit of DDP yoga to be able to do that. It's very impressive. He meant to put his tail between his legs, but he fucked up. John Cena came out. He started yammering about nonsense. Seriously, this was all about Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins up until this point in the segment. Absolutely nobody mentioned John Cena's name. His name was not mentioned one time. Yet he comes out, he just pretends like they did. You would think that they were just cutting the meanest promo ever on John Cena, and he felt compelled to come out and defend himself. No, he had nothing to do with this. But out comes John Cena. And once he came out, the segment just went downhill fast. They gave Cena the chance to win back Dolph Ziggler, Ryback, and Eric Rowan's jobs if he won his match later in the show. But if he lost, he would be out of the championship match at the Royal Rumble, and they said the fans would have the power to decide in an app vote whether John Cena should go through with this or not. I was amazed, but not really, I guess, that they were peddling a storyline on this show. This is the story, that John Cena is a failure because he lost one match last week, so that therefore makes him a failure and he can't win a match. Can John Cena win? How many fucking times have we seen this storyline? They've done this with him time and time again before. Nobody believes it. So why do they do it? It's completely ridiculous. That'd be like doing a storyline. Go back a few years when The Undertaker was still undefeated at WrestleMania. And they did a storyline one year going into Mania. Can The Undertaker win? Can he win at WrestleMania? I don't know. Maybe the fact that he's fucking 19-0 would tell you that he's probably got a pretty good shot of winning. But no, they never did a storyline like that because it would be stupid, just like this is. Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan had a match. Wasn't as good as their Royal Rumble match last year, but it was good for what it was. It was Bryan's first match on Raw, almost a year, which he then proceeded to lose due to interference by Corporate Kane. See, what I think happened in that AFC Championship game is that Corporate Kane interfered and deflated those footballs. That's what happened. We need to think of other important events that Kane can interfere in and then do a series of memes. This all set up Bryan beating Kane on SmackDown to keep his spot in the Royal Rumble match. So at least his interference did serve a purpose here, but it was still overkill, I think, to have Kane constantly interfering in matches every week. At first it was kind of like, haha, funny, and now it's just like, go away. Backstage, Triple H was hanging out with Sean Waltman. Sean Waltman. He did pop in later on, but he was hanging out with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. They wanted him to drop the Authority gimmick. That's what Nash said. And hang with them. Shawn Michaels showed up. They all wondered where X-Pac was when suddenly Damian Sandow appeared dressed up as X-Pac. And I swear to God, he does X-Pac better than X-Pac does X-Pac. It was amazing. Everyone in that building thought it was the real X-Pac. Then the real X-Pac showed up. They did some comedy. Miz showed up. They all buried him. Nash then turned to Triple H and asked him, what kind of show are you running here? And Triple H said, I'm so ashamed. And buried his head in his hands. Well, at least he's able to finally publicly admit that he's ashamed of this show. Most of us are ashamed to watch it on most weeks. We then had a Legends panel with Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and Shawn Michaels, hosted by Byron Saxton. I actually thought this was the best bit of promotion they've done for the Rumble match all month. The Rumble match itself, which the build has been lacking quite a bit, actually. They really haven't built up any sort of stories or feuds. I mean, the story is that, oh, Bryan is back, can he win the Rumble? But that's, you know, kind of a weak story. I guess they have the issue with Roman Reigns and Big Show. I'm sure that will climax in this match. But beyond that, there really are no stories. You know, I kind of like it when there used to be a whole series of stories built up going into the Rumble match. But in terms of making it feel like a big deal, they did as good a job here as they possibly could. They had each guy as Rumble winners themselves talk about what makes the match so important. Ric Flair said it was the greatest moment of his career, winning the 1992 Royal Rumble and the WWE title as well. And I know it sounds goofy for him to say that. I saw some people mocking WWE. Oh, yeah, right, Ric Flair. Oh, his biggest moment was in the Royal Rumble. You know, but you know what? They're trying to tell a story, but it's not really all that goofy when you stop and think about it. You know, the guy comes over to WWE for the first time. He puts in a legendary performance in one of the most star-studded Rumbles they've ever done. He wins the entire thing, going from number three all the way to the end, including the championship. To this day, the only Royal Rumble that was ever contested for the WWE title, he wins the Rumble, he wins the title. I mean, I would think that must have been a nice fuck you to Jim Herd and the idiots at WCW who thought that he was washed up and they let him go in the first place. So I can buy that. I don't know if he actually believes that, but I can buy that. Shawn picked Bray Wyatt to win the Royal Rumble because these days they look alike. Hulk Hogan picked Daniel Bryan. Ric Flair picked Dean Ambrose. Not one pick, interestingly, for Roman Reigns, which is another good sign he's probably winning. Then the Big Show lumbered down to the ring. He talked, and he talked, and he talked some more, and he talked some more. Called the three of them washed-up has-beens begging for attention. Ha! Ha-ha! That's what I say. That was funny. The Big Show calling somebody else washed-up begging for attention. That's a good one. This all ended with Ric Flair chopping the Big Show, and he got knocked out with the KO punch for his troubles. Roman Reigns came out. Stayed silent, so no microphones were harmed in the making of this segment. Silent but deadly. That's how Roman Reigns needs to be. And calling Renee Young baby girl every now and then. I'll accept that. He then clotheslined Big Show over the top rope and out of the ring, which was interesting because, you know, why wouldn't they save that for the Royal Rumble match? Makes me wonder, you know, if Reigns doesn't win tonight, you know, would they go with Big Show eliminating Roman Reigns from the match? Maybe that's like a shocking swerve they figure people aren't expecting. Well, I put nothing past these people. Anything can happen. No matter how predictable things may seem, you never really know until it happens. Okay, and sometimes they just do things to shock people. So if they think everybody knows Roman Reigns is going to win, or Roman Reigns is going to be the one to dump out Big Show, if they already gave it away on Raw last week, maybe the opposite happens tonight. They go with Bryan. Who knows? All I know is when this segment was over, I was convinced that Roman Reigns was winning the Royal Rumble. And I'm sticking with my pick. The segment was fun, I thought, overall. It was, you know, it was a lot better than the last Legends panel they did before the Night of Champions pay-per-view with these three guys and John Cena. I remember that being fairly lame. Speaking of lame, by this point, we got our second wrestling match. We were 90 minutes into this show. We were an hour and a half into the show. An hour and a half had gone by with one match. That is inexcusable. I don't care how long your show is, how much time you think you have, what pay-per-view you think you're trying to promote, so it's okay if we have a lot of talking on the go-home show. No. You cannot have a wrestling show with one match in 90 minutes. I'm sorry. The good news is Dean Ambrose finally won a match. The bad news, he did so at the expense of Bad News Barrett, who, in case you forgot, is the Intercontinental Champion. Champs are chumps. Remember that, people. Keep that hashtag going. Keep hashtagging the shit out of that. I want to start a movement here. Champs are chumps. The New Day came out. They finally tried to explain all of their nauseating positivity. They explained that they have to be happy and jovial, otherwise they'd have to bring out the rage, and they would murder everybody in their path. Yes, bring the rage out. I want to see the rage. Rage on. I don't know if it's leading to that or not, but they better do something soon because they're dead in the water right now. Maybe they've got them doing a Lloyd Braun gimmick from Seinfeld. Serenity now, insanity later. Anyway, they beat the team of Kid Sorrow, which made me very sad. And then I watched a video after this on YouTube of Cesaro winning the Battle Royal at Mania last year, and the reaction he got on Raw the next night from the crowd, sharing the ring with Hulk Hogan in the big Andre the Giant trophy. And I remember then what Vince McMahon said about him not being able to connect with the crowd, and I almost brought out the rage. I had to stop what I was doing. The NWO came out for the Raw reunion segment. The crowd was depressingly mild for this, but how many times can you trot out the old guys, I guess? Scott Hall took a survey. He may have botched it, I'm not sure. Kevin Nash murdered the WWE initials when he took the microphone. I don't know what the fuck he said, other than he then said sarcastically, the NWO was single-handedly responsible for every good thing that has ever happened in the history of the world. Out came the Ascension, and Connor. I'm not even blaming Victor for this. Victor was fine. Okay, Victor was okay. Connor cut the most god-awful, hokey promo I have ever heard, looking straight in Kevin Nash's eyes and telling him, and I quote, "We were born and bred to rip and shred." Nash looked like he was trying so hard not to laugh. He was practically corpsing on camera. With every fiber of his being, it was taking not to bust a gut in that ring. They couldn't even try to pretend that they were intimidated by these two clowns. I mean, how could they? How could they? That's what they are. They're clowns. They've already got the makeup. All they need is the big red nose. JBL got up from the announce booth after that promo and rightfully buried the two of them, and then he revealed an APA shirt under his suit, brought out Ron Simmons for an APA reunion. Thank God it wasn't that APA shirt they once sold that said, "Always pounding ass." I shit you not, they made a shirt during the Attitude Era that said, "APA, always pounding ass." That must be a different kind of APA. I'd hate to be in the ring with them. They all surrounded the ring until the New Age Outlaws came out. Outlaws attacked them, then they fed Victor to JBL, who delivered the most vicious clothesline from hell that you've ever seen. He just absolutely destroyed the poor guy. Still the best clothesline in the business, I gotta hand it to him, JBL. Nothing will ever top the clothesline that he gave to Shane McMahon during the Rock Booker T main event at SummerSlam 01, but this was pretty damn close, I will say. And one last comment on the Ascension here. For everybody who was complaining when this segment, and believe me, there were a lot of complaints on Twitter when this segment was over, that the Ascension was just buried, look what they did to them. Again, we'll see where the storyline progresses, but forget the storyline for a second. The Ascension buried themselves with that shit promo, especially Connor. He doesn't get a pass on this, okay? His delivery was shit. His delivery was shit in NXT, too. There's a reason that that guy was in developmental for at least 4 years, maybe five. He may have been in developmental for almost 5 years. That's a long-ass time to be in developmental. And guess what? If you're that good, You're not going to spend 4 years in developmental. I know Sami Zayn's already been down there for two. There's no way he'll be down there 2 years from now. Okay, some guys just aren't that good. When I used to review NXT when they were on there cutting their promos, and they didn't do very many promos, but on occasion, and this is what made it worse, they weren't even promos live in front of the crowd. The only promos I remember the Ascension really cutting, I mean, they did a few like after they would beat some jobbers, but they had at least a couple of pre-taped backstage promos that went maybe 10 or 15 seconds. They were terrible. And Connor is the one who I would look at. He just looked so awkward. He just how he was, like his mannerisms and how he was awful. So he does not get a pass. I don't care how bad the booking is, how shit the writing is, how bad the material is, and it's all bad. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we were born and bred to rip and shred. I mean, what the fuck is this, 1978? No matter how bad that is, he does not get a pass. He was shit. So he doesn't deserve to get a pass just because he's dealing with bad material. We have Paige and Natalya beating Alicia Fox and Summer Rae. Paige used the PTO on Alicia. 2 minutes and 55 seconds this went. Paige and Natty will meet the Bellas at the Rumble tonight. R-Truth had just enough time to come out and say, whoomp, there it is, at the end of his rap before Rusev beat him with the accolade. Whoomp, there it is. And people say Vince McMahon is out of touch. I can't imagine why that is. Jey Uso pinned The Miz. A fine way to build to the Usos defending their titles against The Miz and Mizdow at the Rumble. Let's beat one half of the challengers. In the main event, John Cena miraculously overcame the odds. There's something you've never heard me say before. He beat Seth Rollins, Big Show, and Kane to win back Dolph Ziggler, Ryback, and Eric Rowan's jobs. Sting appeared on the Titantron, or as JBL said, a picture of Sting. So stupid. Until that picture started moving, I guess, and he walked out on the stage, he pointed in the direction of Triple H, and distracted everybody long enough for Cena to roll up Seth Rollins for the pin. Yes, John Cena wins with a distraction roll-up, with the assist from Sting. Sting's Raw debut will forever be linked to the infamous distraction roll-up finish. But the place popped huge. Sting was easily the biggest star on this show. I joked around with the guys on Soup last week that when you really think about it, he didn't do much of anything. But that doesn't mean I didn't like it. You know, I even said I thought the final 5 or 10 minutes of this show were great. I thought they were the best part of the whole show. And then to make things even better, out came Brock Lesnar to attack Seth Rollins. He F5 Kane. He hoisted up Big Show for the F5. Big Show literally bounced a good foot off the mat when he landed. Rollins ran for his life. And for one night anyway, Brock Lesnar was the biggest babyface on the planet. Great finish. I loved it. If this show ended with Brock Lesnar killing dudes every single week, then I would be a happy man. Last note here. On SmackDown Thursday night, they brought back Ziggler, Ryback, and Rowan. And they had to all run the gauntlet, which means they all were in a match. And they had to win their match in order to qualify for the Royal Rumble. Daniel Bryan, also in the main event against Kane, was basically fighting for his spot in the Rumble. So 4 babyfaces in 4 individual matches on this show, fighting for the right to go to the Royal Rumble match. Bryan, of course, beat Kane, so he's in. Dolph Ziggler beat Wade Barrett. Champs are chumps. We already knew that. So Ziggler's in. And Ryback beat Rusev, I think, by countout. I didn't see the match. But Ryback beat Rusev by countout, so he's in. Eric Rowan had a match with Luke Harper and lost. So Eric Rowan is not in the Royal Rumble. And still, there were people saying, well, Eric Rowan is buried. Why are they burying? This whole thing, my head hurts. I have what Big Vito has. My head hurts, okay? First of all, losing one match does not mean you're buried. Okay? Let's just establish that first. That's number one. Number two, I didn't have a problem with that at all. Because you can't have all 4 babyfaces win all 4 matches. Somebody's got to lose. You've got to create the element of doubt somewhere along the line that, oh shit, somebody lost, so maybe Brian's not going to win in the main event. I assume Brian Kane ended the show. So you've got to tell that story. But here's the other thing. It's Eric fucking Rowan. Who cares? He's not that good. So Eric Rowan is not in the Royal... Oh, heavens, Eric Rowan is not in the Royal Rumble. What will be? What will we do now without that Eric Rowan Brock Lesnar main event at WrestleMania? Who gives a shit? Are people really upset that Eric Rowan is not in the Royal Rumble? Dolph Ziggler got in the Rumble. Daniel Bryan got in the Rumble. Even Ryback, who's been getting a bit of a push lately, he's in the Rumble. Eric Rowan's not in the Rumble, and some people's worlds are collapsing around them. Unbelievable. Who cares? Who cares about Eric Rowan? They don't. They made that very clear with his booking ever since they split him off from the Wyatt family. They fed him to the Big Show just to make the Big Show strong, to make Roman look strong. He was a stepping stone of all people for the Big Show. That tells you right there what they think of Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, when they broke up, it was never about Eric Rowan. It was always Luke Harper. Luke Harper, the potential with him is limitless. He is a great working big man. All he needs is a story and maybe to kind of upgrade his look a little bit. Change his attire. Shave his beard. He's not part of the Wyatt family anymore. He should be. They never should have broken up that family, but they did. Luke Harper has a big future in WWE if they don't fuck it up. Eric Rowan has no future. His future is on the unemployment line or in TNA. And I don't have anything personally against the guy. I'm just saying, not everybody is going to make it to that level. Eric Rowan, I don't see as somebody who will make it to that level. There is nothing about him that stands out that somebody else on that roster doesn't have. He's a big guy. So is Luke Harper. I'll take Luke Harper over Eric Rowan any day of the week. Luke Harper should be beating Eric Rowan on SmackDown. Luke Harper's another one. He never wins any matches. He finally wins a match and people are complaining because Eric Rowan is not in the Royal Rumble. People will truly complain about anything. I now see that. I mean, really, of all the things to complain about, Eric Rowan, are you out of your mind? I was blown away by this. Not everybody was complaining, but enough people that it just... I thought I was living in a different universe for a second. Who cares about Eric Rowan? All the key people that need to be in that Rumble match are in there. They've qualified. They're in it. That's all that matters. Eric Rowan, he doesn't matter. I love NXT. Have I said that lately? I don't think I say it enough. Because I do. I love this show. It's my favorite show. Not even close. William Regal opened up the show this week. He announced that NXT TakeOver, the next special, will air on February 11th, and that Sami Zayn's next challenger will be determined by a single elimination tournament that begins tonight. I love me some tournaments, even if Vince McMahon doesn't. Angry Sami Zayn stormed down to the ring for a match with Ty Dillinger. Poor Ty Dillinger was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Match never happened. Sami beat the shit out of Dillinger, threw him out of the ring. Sami screamed for Kevin Owens to come out. Regal came out instead. He told Sami, "You need to stop. You can't behave this way." Sami told him, "I'm not wrestling another match until you give me Kevin Owens." And Regal correctly pointed out that Owens has done nothing to earn a title shot. All he's done is attack people. Some sensibility here from an authority figure on this show. I'm not used to this. Sami says, "I don't care. It's not about the title. Make it non-title," he says. "Whatever you have to do, I want Kevin Owens." And so Regal made the match for February 11th, Sami Zayn against Kevin Owens in a non-title match. And I gotta say, I like it. I like it a lot. It tells me that these guys are going to be feuding for a while. That's number one, which is A-okay with me. That first match should not be a match so much as it should be a fight. As angry as Sami Zayn was here, this should not be a match that starts with a collar and elbow tie-up. This should be a fucking war between the two of these guys. Frankly, I think it should be a fight that goes all over Full Sail, all over the Full Sail campus. Let them fight outside the building, back into the building. We haven't really seen a match like that in NXT. And I don't know what kind of rules there may be on campus about allowing that sort of thing to happen. It is a college campus, after all. But I'd love to see these guys just brawling all over the place, beating the hell out of each other. It makes me wonder, though, if they're saving the first championship match between them for WrestleMania. You know, there's been some rumors of adding an NXT title match on the show, even if just to the pre-show. I'm not totally against the idea, although a big part of me wishes they wouldn't do that. They would save their first big Mania moment for when they're actually on the main roster. But I don't mind the non-title stipulation at all. I really don't. And Sami Zayn coming out, showing that kind of fire, showing that something actually meant something to him. He showed real emotion, which is not, you know, it's something we don't get enough of on Raw. We kind of got that with Brock Lesnar. Brock stormed to the ring at the beginning of Raw Monday night. I'd like to see more of that. And Sami, I thought, just knocked it out of the park here. You know, he was just a man possessed. He wanted to kill Kevin Owens. Although there was something a little goofy about this. I'll get to that in a second. It's a minor nitpick. We had our first round tournament match, the first of the first round matches. Finn Balor against Curtis Axel. And, you know, the match was okay. I gotta say, you know, Curtis Axel, he hasn't been on NXT very long. He's only had a couple of matches. I think his first one was with Hideo Itami. So now he's had matches with Itami and Balor, two of the best wrestlers that they've got, really. And neither one of these matches has lit my world on fire. Axel just doesn't do it for me. You know, I hope he benefits from his time down there, but I would say right about now, jobbing to the new guys on NXT is probably where he belongs. And Finn Balor got the win with the double foot stomp off the top, so he advances. Bull Dempsey was very upset about his loss to Baron Corbin last week, but next week he says they're having a rematch as part of the number one contenders tournament. He will get his revenge. See, matches have consequences on this show. Wins and losses matter. How old school. What an old school concept that is. Charlotte and Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Championship. Becky Lynch interfered about 2 minutes into the match. I didn't like this. This to me came off as really dumb. Maybe the idea was that Becky Lynch is kind of out for herself. She wants the championship. That's not the story they told. That's not the story the announcers bothered telling. So I just thought this didn't make any sense at all, because you got Becky Lynch with Sasha Banks. Sasha has earned herself another championship opportunity. And then 2 minutes into the match, Becky interferes and she costs Sasha the match. So I thought that was completely stupid. Bayley ran down for the save. She chased off the heels. And then as Bayley stared at the championship belt, she turned around and gave Charlotte a belly to Bayley suplex and laid her out. William Regal came out. He announced that there would be a four-way match for the title, TakeOver, involving Charlotte defending against Bayley, Becky Lynch, and Sasha Banks. All I know is the last four-way we had on a TakeOver show was one of the best matches all year. And you've got some women in this match. Every single one of the women in this match is at the very least good, and in some cases, very good. So I think there is some great potential here. We have not seen a four-way women's match on NXT before. I think this thing could steal the show next month. I really do. I'm looking forward to that a lot. There's a new male NXT announcer, but he was never identified. I have no idea who he is. He tried to get a word with Kevin Owens, who is just sitting around backstage texting on his phone. And that was the goofy thing I mentioned earlier. It was kind of goofy to see, you know, you've got a crazed Sami Zayn on the loose who's looking to just rip this guy to shreds. Apparently, Sami's not looking hard enough. Maybe he should have texted him. Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy beat the Vaudevillains in an upset. Then afterwards, they challenged the Lucha Dragons to a tag team title match next week. The balls on these two. I like it, though. It puts the Lucha Dragons in a tough spot, because if they say no, it makes them look like a couple of pussies. So sure enough, we were later informed that the Lucha Dragons have accepted, so we have ourselves a championship match next week. Main event was another first-round tournament match, pitting Hideo Itami against Tyler Breeze. Breeze is so goddamn underrated. He disappears for weeks, nobody talks about him, he comes back, and he gives Hideo Itami his best match since he debuted on NXT. This was the best match Hideo Itami has been part of, singles or tag, since he made his debut, which would have been what, in the summer? I think he made his debut, summer or fall. This had a This Is Awesome chant by the end, tons of chants for it. Breeze, who I've said before, needs to adopt the super kick as his finish, nailed Itami with the super kick, which he's now calling the supermodel kick, which I love that. He nailed him with a picture-perfect kick for a near fall that was just brilliant. It was my favorite part of the whole match. No GTS tease from Itami this week. He won with a kick to the head. I'll say it again. He needs a finish. He needs a new finish. That little kick to the head. Considering how many kicks he does in the course of a match, it's very underwhelming. And it kind of comes from out of nowhere. The fans don't know how to react to it. Is it the finish? Is it not the finish? You know, like I said, a simple kick to the head I don't think is going to cut it. The GTS would be perfect, but whatever it is, they need to come up with something new for this guy quickly. Get him a move. So by virtue of his win here, looking at the brackets, that means we're getting a Finn Balor versus Hideo Itami match in this tournament probably in 2 weeks. And all I can say to that is, oh hell yes, please give me more. Next week, we have something of a loaded show. We've got the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens contract signing for their match at TakeOver. And those always go so well, as we know. Baron Corbin and Bull Dempsey and Adrian Neville against Tyson Kidd in the final two first-round tournament matches. I'm going to just call a draw right now between Corbin and Dempsey. I figured nobody wins. I just don't see them beating Corbin yet, and I don't see them beating Dempsey twice in a row. So the winner of Neville versus Kidd getting a bye to the finals would make sense. And I mean, hey, maybe we're building to a Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville match in the finals. You know, that was the match that Triple H saw a tape of years ago that earned Adrian Neville a contract. We could end up seeing it again. And why not? Why not? If Adrian Neville's headed to the main roster soon anyway, then why not do it? And then the tag team titles will be on the line. The Lucha Dragons defending against Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy. So I am very much looking forward to the show this week. NXT is life. NXT is love. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, people. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt, and the next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off and get your shirt right now. We're going to do said tweet a little early this week here as part of the TNA section. And I think you know where I'm going with this. This involves Josh Matthews and Jim Ross. And I touched on this on Soup when I was on their show on Tuesday, but I want to talk about it again here. So unless you're living under a rock, you pretty much have heard what happened. Jim Ross tweeted something out last weekend, something very innocent. You know, he was watching football, UFC, and he tweeted out that UFC, quote, won the night while battling the NFL playoffs. Excellent idea. Now, Missionary on Wrestling Soup, when I was on, thought that JR was being sarcastic. That's not how I read that. I read that as, you know, as far as shows went, UFC hit a home run. There were some great fights. And as it turned out, it was a brilliant move on UFC's part because they did record numbers on Fox Sports 1. And later on, Ross actually did clarify. He said that he wasn't trying to say UFC beat the NFL in the ratings, but UFC programming, their little programming experiment worked, which it did. So, no sarcasm. Anyway, however he intended it, this set off Josh Matthews, the new lead bad boy in TNA, who responded with this gem. He said, "Why anybody would say UFC won the night over the NFL is beyond me. Please stop. It's not a fair fight. If you are over 60, just go away." To which JR responded, "That's a little stiff regarding my remark. I'm over 60 and I'm not going away. Didn't expect this from you." And Josh Matthews said, "Well, it was stiff. I get that. Sometimes you got to call it like you see it." I'm so glad he said that because I'm going to do the same thing right now. I'm going to take Josh Matthews' advice, and I'm going to call it like I see it. Now, Josh Matthews went on to tweet, this is what he said, "After 13 years, I get to be open and express what I'm thinking via Twitter. Backlash is expected and understandable, but I'm speaking my mind." I've never said a bad word about Josh Matthews as an announcer. You know, he's nothing special, but he's not bad. They needed a fresh face in that announce booth on Impact, anybody but Mike Tenay, and they grabbed him. So, because he said something incredibly stupid, I'm not going to knock him as an announcer. But I've got news for Josh Matthews. If Dixie Carter thought that she could get Jim Ross as her play-by-play guy tomorrow, Josh Matthews would be cashing unemployment checks and sitting on his couch at home. And that is a fact. And I made this comment, you know, on Soup. Jim Ross has more talent in his pinky finger than Josh Matthews has in his pinky ring. The guy wears so much bling, so many rings on his fingers. I'm pretty sure he must have a pinky ring in there somewhere. The only reason he has a job as the lead announcer in TNA is because he's buddies with John Gaborik. Or as I used to call him during the first season of Tough Enough, Baby Vader. Okay, that's how they know each other. Josh was on that first season of Tough Enough. Big John was on the show. He worked in WWE as a production guy for years and years. Worked with Josh when Josh became an announcer because he couldn't hack it as a wrestler. So when Gaborik went to TNA, they took this WWE production guy that had no creative experience at all, and they put him in charge of the creative team. Okay. So he went there. That was Josh's in. Okay? John was his in. That's why he's sitting next to Taz. If 60-year-old Jim Ross wanted his job, he would have his job. And maybe that's why Matthews was so bent out of shape. That was, you know, that was the scuttlebutt that he may have thought Ross was angling for his job because of some comments that he's made. I don't know what these comments are or where they're from, but maybe that's how Josh felt, and so he lashed out. He felt threatened. Get over yourself. I mean, really, after 13 years, I'm finally able to speak my mind. I'm free. You know, it's like, I said this on Soup. I begged somebody, please make me a movie poster. Last year, 12 Years a Slave, won for Best Picture, okay? It was a great movie. It was up for a whole bunch of awards. I begged people, please make me a Photoshop of 13 Years a Slave with Josh Matthews' face on it. And you guys delivered, okay? You guys came through, okay? The head cheese over at 24wrestling.com got me this great poster. A lot of you guys sent in your Photoshops. It was awesome. They were all great. 13 Years a Slave. This guy, he's oppressed. Finally, he's broken the shackles of his oppression. So, you know, he got a lot of heat for his remark. You knew an apology was coming. He finally said, look, the tweet was out of character and disrespectful to JR. I'm sorry. I'll continue to speak my mind, but in a respectful slash proper way. I've made this comment before. Can you imagine what it would have been like if Twitter had existed in the 80s? And the early 90s, all the late night parties and the coke binges that these guys, you know, were on back then, taking out their phones, taking their iPhones out and tweeting at 3 in the morning. Can you imagine Randy Savage on Twitter in like 1986? Or even during the Attitude Era. Those guys during the Attitude Era. I mean, everyone's always shooting their mouths off now and getting into trouble. How freaking amazing would those tweets have been back in the day? Oh, I was a slave for 13 years, and now I'm no longer oppressed. Now I can speak my mind, and I can vote, and I can... I mean, give me a break. Nobody, you know, nobody is accidentally in a job for 13 years. If he hated it so much there, why the fuck didn't she leave? You know, it's like, we hear this from some people, and I'm not saying that WWE is not, you know, always not a fun place to work, and that they do restrict your freedom of speech when it comes to some of these things on social media. But I just love it how, you know, now I'm free. Now I can say whatever I want to say. I wasn't able to do that for 13 years of my life. It's like, dude, are we supposed to have sympathy for you? Like, get over it. If you didn't like it there, you could have left. There's the door. It's not like Josh Matthews was such an important part of the machine in WWE. Somebody else who spoke out this week and made a joke of TNA is Lisa Marie Verone, former Victoria in WWE, or Tara in TNA. Is it Verone or Varon? I think it might be Lisa Marie Varon. Anyway, Victoria. She did an interview with Jim Ross on his podcast, and she told a very interesting story. She said when it came to TNA, she said, I wasn't getting any respect from Dixie Carter. I promoted their Chicago show. Apparently they had some show in Chicago. I paid a publicist $2,000 a month for 3 months to get that TNA show in Chicago known. I went up to Dixie one day and I said, hey, did you hear about all the stuff I was doing to promote the show? And Dixie goes, yeah, I heard. And I thought to myself, oh, are you kidding me? I'm out $6,000 promoting your show and it's not my job, but I wanted the Chicago show to be big. And she said she held a party for some of the talent at her... She owns a pizza place, so she held a party at the restaurant for some of the talent when they were in town. And then she found out that TNA was sending emails out to the roster asking them to promote another pizza place in Chicago as being the best pizza they ever had. And the kicker here is that she says she she was talking to Bruce Pritchard about Dixie Carter and said, this is what Tara said. She said, the day I quit my job, and this is her word. She said, the day I quit my job, I'm going to punch that cunt in the face. And Bruce Pritchard, in response, said, you'd be doing us all a favor. She said that she is not a fan of Dixie Carter. Of course, when I would do podcasts, when I was working for TNA, I would say how great it is to have a female boss. But I wanted to vomit in my mouth. When I do TNA night at my restaurant, I have to do drink specials because nobody comes in. Ouch. That might have been the biggest burn of the whole interview. Here's my question to Tara, if she hears this. Why in God's name would you spend $6,000 of your own money to promote a TNA show? TNA doesn't even spend that much to promote a TNA show. I mean, that'd be like a small movie studio putting out a film, doing no promotion for it, and so the lead actor decides to pay out of his own pocket for all the marketing expenses. You know? Now, you might be willing to do that if it's your own movie. Otherwise, that doesn't happen. TNA doesn't even run house shows anymore. That's how little they think of them. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy with them. Nobody comes out to the shows, therefore we just won't run them anymore. Well, of course nobody comes out to the shows when you don't promote them. I've said this for years. Bully Ray said the same thing. He was making the media rounds like a year ago when TNA came to New York for their first string of shows, and he was doing radio shows up the yin-yang, and he even said it. He worked for TNA at the time, and he even said the same thing. The biggest obstacle, the biggest problem for TNA is marketing and advertising. Now, whether it's the biggest or one of the biggest, it's a damn big problem for TNA. I just mentioned the story when I was on Soup last week of Kazarian. Kazarian left TNA. Okay, him and Daniels did not get re-signed. They let those guys go. And Kazarian was doing an interview and telling a story when he was still there, offering, you know, he went up to management and offered to get them a cheap deal on some wraps for their trucks, the vehicle wraps, that would at least identify the trucks with the TNA logo and branding so people in town would know, hey, look, TNA's in town. And they said no. The wrestlers want to help. Victoria clearly wanted to help. I'm sure, you know, part of that was to promote her own restaurant. She may have had selfish motivations there. But obviously she got a raw deal. Apparently disrespecting others, be it on Twitter or wherever, is a contagious disease in TNA. Impact this week. The cutaways to Taz and Josh in the booth in Nashville were even sillier than it was last week. It just looks so rinky-dink when they do that. Austin Aries, Magnus, Rockstar Spud, and Velvet Sky, on behalf of one Robbie E., all grab briefcases to win the opening Feast or Fired match at the top of the show. Any match with briefcases hanging that contain a possible title shot in them, I just can't help but look at them as a Money in the Bank ripoff. But I will say, TNA at least makes it dramatic with the risk of being fired, the way they build it up. The contents of the briefcases would be revealed later in the show. Bram was very upset with Magnus for costing him a briefcase in the opening match, and both men had to be separated, seemingly killing their team dead. Keep that in mind, okay? One guess as to which briefcase Magnus ended up with later in the show. Bobby Lashley came out, got on the mic, which makes me cringe more than it does when Roman Reigns grabs a mic these days. And in the most wooden, monotone way possible, Lashley said, "Give me my title. Now." I think I may have said that with more conviction than he did. Breaking him away from MVP was the worst thing they could have done. I know they've been building to it, but it really was painfully obvious here how much better off he was having MVP as his mouthpiece. Kenny King came out, cut a promo on Lashley. They wrestled to a DQ when the Beatdown Clan ran in. MVP told Lashley after the match, "If you want your title back, you can meet me out in the street later tonight." Gail Kim beat Havoc by DQ after Havoc shoved down the referee. Lame finish, but a pretty stiff match. At one point, Havoc delivered a knee to the face that seemed to shake up Gail. She's lucky she didn't go blind. I mean, this knee, I'm surprised her eyes didn't pop out of the back of her skull. After the match, Havoc dropped Gail on the ring bell outside and was about to finish her off when the lights went out. When they came back on, Awesome Kong was in the ring. Havoc threw a forearm at her, but Kong just clotheslined her out of the ring. As somebody who was at the lockdown tapings where they had, I'm going to assume it was their first match. Lockdown won't air on TV, I think, until February 6th, I believe. There is a cage match on that show with Kong and Havoc. Maybe they had a normal singles match at the previous taping that I wasn't at. Maybe that'll air next week, I don't know. But as somebody who was at the lockdown tapings, I found the match to be really disappointing. I won't give away the finish or anything, but I just found the match itself to be underwhelming. I heard Kong has a bad back, so maybe that has something to do with it, but I like how they've been building these two up as monsters on a collision course. I do like that. I just hope they have another match down the road, and the lockdown one isn't the only one they have, because, like I said, the one that airs in a couple of weeks, I thought, was a bit of a letdown. We had Koya, the former Mahabali Shera, the new Indian sensation that TNA brought in, and they put him with James Storm's faction, the Revolution. James Storm has renamed him Koya, which stands for Lost. He had a match with Tigre Uno. It went maybe 90 seconds. He didn't look very good here at all. Koya didn't do anything. All he did was his finish, which was a spinebuster. Otherwise, he just stood there and took some kicks and took some moves, so I didn't see enough of him to really determine how good or bad this guy is. He just did a spinebuster and got the pin, and that's really all there was to it. He's a big guy, though. I mean, I saw him in person at the tapings. He's a big, jacked-up guy. Low-key and Eric Young beat Kurt Angle and Bobby Roode when Eric Young delivered an elbow drop with a chair onto Roode. This was all behind the referee's back. He was tied up with Kurt Angle, who was fighting with the Beatdown Clan and Samoa Joe outside the ring. Low-key, who was the legal man, then got the pin on Bobby Roode. We then had a match, or what was supposed to be a match, between EC3. And you'll notice that brace that's on EC3's arm, that's because he had, I think, bicep surgery, and he really shouldn't be wrestling. He's not probably ready to wrestle yet, so he wears that on his arm. EC3 against Jeremy Baldash, I guess we can call him, since he is bald now. They identified Mark Andrews at ringside as the winner of British Boot Camp 2. And I was watching this, and they finally identified him, and I thought to myself, so that's who that is. I saw him the third night of the tapings just walk out to the ring with Rockstar Spud. Nobody around me had any fucking clue who this guy was. You know, this skinny-looking guy, 150 pounds soaking wet. They never bothered to tell us who he was, so finally, at least now I know who he is. So they had, again, it wasn't really much of a match. You know, Tyrus got involved. Jeremy Borash, you know, he did take it to EC3 right off the bat. You know, he went after him. He was laying in those blows, but eventually Tyrus came in. Mark Andrews did come in. He did a springboard, I think, off the ropes. And the only other thing I really remember from this is that he did a shooting star press off the top rope onto Tyrus outside the ring. That was pretty impressive. And that's really all there was to it. So this story will continue on, I guess, between Spud and JB and EC3. Matt Hardy and James Storm had a match. Storm went for his Eye of the Storm move, but Hardy slipped out, caught him with a small package for the pin. James Storm teased a handshake after the match. Matt Hardy, in so many words, basically told him to go fuck himself. And then got attacked from behind by Storm's tag team partner, the Monster Abyss. They teased Abyss, killing Matt Hardy with Janice, his board with the nails in it. Not Dixie Carter's mom. Although Dixie Carter's mother, her name is Janice. That was the inspiration for calling it Janice. So he went to use it on Matt. Jeff Hardy ran down with a chair to make the save. He then challenged Abyss to a Monsters Ball match on next week's show. And in another priceless, only in TNA moment, Josh Matthews, on commentary, asks Taz, what in the world is a Monsters Ball match? Now keep in mind, they're sitting in a studio calling a taped show. And nobody thought to fill this guy in on what a Monsters Ball match is? Boy. And this guy says if you're over the age of 60, you should go away. Makes me wonder. We then had the Feast or Fired reveal with Christy Hemme, who was in a boardroom. Looked like it was taped in Nashville. They don't even attempt to pretend that this stuff is like not being done at the arena. We just saw a segment where Rockstar Spud, he was, you know, his hair was all must. You know, he was just part of this whole big brawl. And literally, they cut to a scene of Spud immaculately dressed up in his little suit walking into a boardroom. So they don't even try to hide it anymore. So Christy Hemme was the MC, is that even the appropriate word for it? She proceeded over this reveal, and Rockstar Spud opened his briefcase. It was for an X Division title shot, And then we had Magnus open up his briefcase. Surprise, surprise, he has a tag team title shot. So I guess we'll see how they build things between him and Bram now, since they're partners. And it came down to Austin Aries and Robbie E. Now, I will say Robbie E here was phenomenal. He's nervous. He realizes, wait a minute, I didn't pull down the briefcase. Technically, it was Velvet who pulled down the briefcase, so he put Velvet Sky in the chair and said, this is all on you. And Velvet Sky opened the briefcase, and unfortunately for her, it was a pink slip. Velvet Sky is fired. And Robbie E, I mean, it has to be seen to be believed. He went into celebration mode. He couldn't believe it. And he kept saying over and over again, I still have a job. I'm still employed. You're fired. And then they had these cutaways to Robbie, like after the fact, like you see on these reality shows where they interview you, and he's like, she'll be fine. She'll find another man. She, you know, I still have a job. He was very excited to have a job, making whatever it is he's making on his TNA contract. He was very happy. So the question is Velvet Sky really gone? My gut tells me no. She posted a tweet on, I think yesterday, actually, saying, you know, WTF, what is this? 8 years, and this is how I'm treated. Tweet at Destination America and tweet at Impact Wrestling to let them know how upset you are by me being fired. So this just screams angle to me. And it makes me wonder also if Bully Ray, I know I've said that he'll be in the Rumble tonight. That's my prediction. But it does make me wonder if Bully doesn't return to TNA. And maybe this time he's got Velvet at his side. You know, he and Velvet are together in real life. Maybe they put them together on TV and Bully makes his return. He has had conversations supposedly with TNA about coming back. It's not like the door is closed on him going back there. So I don't really know what to make of the whole Velvet thing. I just look at this and I think to myself, angle. But then again, I think the last time they did Feast or Fire, Chavo Guerrero got the fired briefcase and he really was fired. He never did come back. I still say Bully shows up at the Rumble tonight. That's just my gut. Show ended with Lashley and MVP fighting outside on 34th Street in New York City. I tell you what, I like this, and I'll tell you why. I don't think this lived up to the potential that it had. They could have really had some fun with this and had these guys brawling all over the place. And it was really just in front of the building, and it ended 2 minutes later. You know, the Beatdown Clan came, and then Kurt Angle came, and Bobby Roode came. So in that respect, I was kind of disappointed because I think this had a lot of potential, but it was different, you know? You know, you see these two guys out on the streets of New York City having a fight, and it was unlike anything that you'll see on WWE television. I'll give TNA a lot of credit. It was a creative idea. You know, they thought outside the box. They thought outside the building, if you want to say that. And I know that building very well. You know, I've been to that building many times. I was just at that building a few weeks ago, and that's the entrance to the Manhattan Center. And to see these two guys out there, you know, beating the hell out of each other on the street. Funny enough, there was a cop car in the background. Nobody seemed too concerned about breaking up this fight on the street. But then again, the cops aren't really arresting as many people these days, supposedly. They're not very happy with the mayor here in New York. So I guess they let little things like this go by. You know, two guys beating the shit out of each other in the street. So Kurt Angle and Bobby Roode came to make the save for Lashley as he was being assaulted by this gang on the streets of New York. And Bobby Roode looked down on the ground, and this may have been the most appropriate moment of the entire show. He saw the TNA World Heavyweight Championship belt laying next to a trash can in a pile of trash. And he picked the title up out of the trash, looked at it, looked at Lashley, who is the champion, and looked back at the title. They had a very tense stare down, and they went off the air. So I give them kudos for trying something unique, trying something that you don't get to see every day. I thought it was cool, even if they didn't really take it all the way. That's part of the reason why I said earlier, you know, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, when they have their non-title match at TakeOver next month, this should not be a match. This should be a fight. These two guys want to tear each other apart. I don't want to see collar and elbow tie-ups and Ric Flair knife-edge chops. You know, I want to see these guys beat the hell out of each other. I want to see weapons. I want to see them go all over Full Sail and see something kind of like what we saw here at the end of Impact. I actually did like that. Just some brief thoughts on Lucha Underground this week. It was episode 11. I'm still enjoying Lucha Underground quite a bit. They opened the show with a tag team match. It was Cortez and Cisco against Mascarita Sagrada and Pimpinella Escarlata. So you have Cortez and Cisco against a midget and what they call an exotico, or actually, as Matt Stryker just flat out called him on commentary, a transvestite. So this was a very interesting opening match. The crew, Cisco and Cortez, got the win. They hit their little 3D codebreaker combination finish for the win. Now, they're Big Rick's boys, okay? Big Rick, okay, the former Ezekiel Jackson. He's kind of the leader, and they're his boys. So he comes into the ring when the match is over. He's got a lit cigar, hands it over to one of his guys, and starts to cut a very poor promo before his crew jumps him. They turned on him. They took his legs out from underneath him. They started beating the hell out of him. Maybe they jumped him because he was cutting a really shitty promo. I would like to think that's why they did it. They grab a kendo stick. They hit Rick with it. They hold Rick down. Cisco picks up Rick's lit cigar and puts it out in his eye. Wow. Talk about brutal. So they put this cigar out in Big Rick's eye. He's writhing around in pain on the mat. And afterwards, the whole crew, they don't head to the back. They actually head right into Dario Cueto's office. And Cueto says, you know, it was hard for Big Rick to see the bigger picture. Now it'll be hard for him to see anything. And then he pays off the entire crew and says, you work for me now. So, okay. They didn't attack Rick because he cut a shitty promo, but I like to think they kind of did. Vampiro had a sit-down interview with Cage, Brian Cage. Cage says, I won't wait in line. I attacked Prince Puma to jump ahead of the line. I am the best. Blah, 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 blah. He's talking himself up. Not doing very well at it, frankly. I thought he was a little rocky here in this promo. Vampiro says, you look like a big guy with a big ego. That didn't sit well with Cage. Vampiro tells Cage, convince me. Convince me that, you know, you deserve to be the guy here in Lucha Underground. And Cage's response is, well, I'm bigger, I'm faster, and I want it more. And Vampiro says, that's it, I'm convinced. This guy's a future champion. Doesn't take much, apparently, to convince Vampiro. This wasn't very good, but I like the idea behind it, doing these kind of sit-down interviews. I just thought this didn't come off that well, personally. We had Superfly against Pentagon Jr. Pentagon wins with a package pile driver. I really like Pentagon Jr. I love the get-up, I love the makeup, his stuff looks stiff as hell. I like the guy. He grabbed the microphone when the match was over. He said that Chavo Guerrero was a fraud. Says he found a new partner. I don't know what any of this meant. I don't remember there being any sort of alliance with him and Chavo. I don't know if this was a babyface turn. I don't know. But I do like Pentagon Jr. Sexy Star and El Mariachi Loco. Flying arm drag off the top by Sexy Star. She got caught after that with a stun gun across the top rope. El Mariachi Loco goes up top, misses, and Sexy Star gets the win with a small package. And in the main event, King Cuerno and Drago, last luchador standing, so in case you couldn't figure it out, this was last man standing rules. Thrill of the Hunt is the name of King Cuerno's finishing move, and he nailed the Thrill of the Hunt on Drago off the apron, diving off the apron through a table. That was the big spot in this match. Remember, last week, these guys killed each other. Drago was the one doing that crazy dive off the balcony last week. So these guys are just killing each other week after week. So fast forward to the end of the match here. Drago is down in the corner, and Cuerno finds himself a rope, which he proceeds to use to tie Drago to the bottom rope. He's got the rope, like, across his mouth. He's got him tied down. This guy's not going anywhere. But it was very similar to the duct tape finish that we've seen a couple of times before in WWE in last man standing matches, which is kind of lame. You know, I know you do what you have to do to win. That's kind of the object here. But the whole idea of doing a last man standing match is that you have two guys who despise one another. And one guy is beaten so badly at the end of this match, he cannot respond to the count of 10. When you tie a guy to the ropes, when you just tie him down, you know, it's a tad bit underwhelming. So Cuerno takes his giant deer head after he's won the match and Drago is still tied up. Takes his giant deer head, puts it on Drago's head. While Matt Stryker says, well, that appears to be the end of this feud. I don't know. If I was Drago, I think I might have something to say about that. So that was Lucha Underground. Good show. Not the best. You know, just kind of there. I wasn't really overly excited by anything that happened on there, but the wrestling was fine. Let's move on to the mailbag. If you have questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. We got a bunch of audio questions here this week. And I just got an audio question that popped up in my inbox about 10 minutes ago from a familiar friend of the podcast. So let's see what he has to say.
Solomonster, it's me, Noah Mark, live here from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm back at the scene of the crime. I had myself a hand grenade last night, and I didn't get kicked out of Tropical Isle. I just ran a half marathon here in New Orleans, and Dave Bautista's music came on my iPod as I was listening and running. Of course, I listen to wrestling music as I run, and I couldn't help thinking this being the anniversary of last year's Royal Rumble. If Dave Bautista was not announced ahead of time, if it was a complete surprise at the Royal Rumble, my personal belief is that we in attendance, I was there, wouldn't have booed as much or at all. We would have been so surprised, we would have maybe forgotten to boo and maybe forgotten just for a little bit Daniel Bryan's plight. Do you think if Dave was a surprise at last year's Royal Rumble, the chain of events would have happened with Daniel Bryan? Maybe the momentum wouldn't have been so strong. Maybe he wouldn't have been booed at every Raw or enough where it would have been like a 50-50, like a John Cena 50-50, and maybe they would have went down that road.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Having those hand grenades in New Orleans for WrestleMania was one of the best parts of the whole week. It really was. Those fucking things are awesome. Batista, last year, that's a good question. Here's the thing. If Batista was a complete surprise, he would have gotten a monster reaction coming out, and I think it would have sustained for a little bit, and once Rey Mysterio came out at number 30, everything would have played out exactly as it did. I honestly believe that. Slight variations in crowd reaction, maybe, but that crowd wanted to see Daniel Bryan in that match. They wanted to see him win that match, and when they realized that he wasn't coming out, that crowd was going to turn on Batista and everybody else no matter what. So I really honestly don't think it would have changed the trajectory of things very much, if at all. I really don't. I think, and even if the reaction was more positive and it wasn't overly negative, I still think in the weeks that followed, everything, the way it played itself out, things really wouldn't have been that much different at all. I think things would have played out exactly as they did. So it would have been cool. I think it would have been a lot cooler to have him come out as a total surprise. And I think that initial reaction would have been humongous. He would have gotten the biggest reaction of the night if nobody honestly expected him to be there. But I think that crowd was so hell-bent on seeing Bryan have his moment and just seeing the story progress in that way. And maybe they had an agenda as well, that I really don't think it would have made that much of a difference. It's not like people would have been going, ho-ho-ho, you know, Batista won the Rumble, yay! Like, no, I don't think so. And by the way, that probably is the voice they would use. So no, I don't think it would have made that much of a difference. Next audio question, we have a few of them this week. This one comes to us from Incubus.
Hey, Solomonster, Incubus here. What was a bigger blunder by WWE? Inadvertently turning face the man that defeated The Undertaker at WrestleMania, or allowing Brock to conquer the streak, knowing his contract would be up 1 year later?
I don't think either one was a blunder. I don't think he's a babyface. I don't think he's a full-on babyface. And here's the thing with Undertaker last year, okay? If things played out the way that we're all supposed to believe they played out, it was a Vince McMahon decision, okay? Vince said it himself when Austin had him on his podcast on the network, right? But it was a decision that was made that day, because Vince looked at Undertaker, he looked, I guess, at the state that he was in, and the situation being what it was, and said, that's it, you're done. I don't think Vince had this grand plan of, well, we're going to push Brock Lesnar as the champion and the conqueror, and we really need you to help put this guy over, because he's going to be our monster. I honestly don't think that's what happened. I don't. I don't think that whole plan was hatched until after the fact. I just think Vince saw Undertaker, and maybe physically, I don't know, saw something that the rest of us didn't, and he said, it's time. That's it. The decision was made. Undertaker may not have agreed with it, but he went along with it, and that's how it played out. And it almost wouldn't have mattered who he was looking at across the ring. It could have been The Undertaker against Sting. It could have been The Undertaker against Bray Wyatt. It could have been The Undertaker against all three members of The Shield. You know, I don't really think it mattered. I think in some ways, Brock Lesnar, not that he cares, but you can say that Brock Lesnar lucked out. He just happened to be The Undertaker's opponent that year. The decision was made at the last minute because Vince felt the time was right, and it almost didn't even matter who the other body was across the ring from him. So was that a blunder? You could say the decision to end the streak was a blunder. I wouldn't have done it. You know, I like the way that Brock benefited from it, but he didn't need that. He didn't need Brock Lesnar to beat The Undertaker just to book Brock Lesnar as a strong heel. He could have done that without having anything to do with The Undertaker. So I wouldn't have ended the streak personally. You could say that's a blunder, but no, I don't think either of those things are blunders because, like I said, I really don't think that Brock is a babyface. I think he'll be back to being a heel probably tonight. I mean, people may cheer for him in Philly. I don't think he's being booked as a babyface. I think it was a one-week aberration. Now, I may look like a fool if Paul Heyman turns on Brock tonight and that turns him babyface, but I don't think either one of those things really could be considered blunders.
Hey, Solomonster, it's Kingpin Jason Kaser from Juneau, Alaska, dropping you a line, and I had a question/idea that I wanted to run by you, get your opinion on. We all know Double J, Jeff Jarrett, has a Global Force Wrestling promotion. He's inked a deal with New Japan. The guy's a member of the Bullet Club. He's done a little bit of business in Mexico and South Africa, and I was wondering if he were to get somebody like ROH, Lucha Underground, possibly TNA, maybe a Northern European promotion under the same umbrella, something similar to what the NWA had back in the 80s with their regional setup, and that would be a way for these promotions to compete on the global level against the big box boys, while simultaneously providing the casual wrestling fan here in America a choice of what to watch versus the same old boring shit you see every Monday night for 3 hours. It would expose them to new wrestling styles and give them a chance to see new talent like Shinsuke Nakamura, who I think would knock it out of the ballpark here in the States. What do you think about that?
It's a nice idea in theory, just completely impractical. You know, first of all, TNA will never work with Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett will never work with TNA. That's number one. Even if he had working relationships with every other major promotion, you know, all over the world, multiple countries, it won't work unless Global Force Wrestling has television, which they still don't. They're supposedly working on it. We're working on getting TV. Working on it and having it are two different things. And the reality today is that without TV, you're not going to get very far. You know, It's hard to bring all of these different products to the masses and expose them to these different products without having national television. I'm not even talking about syndicated like what Ring of Honor has. That's not good enough. They need a real TV deal like WWE or TNA has. Or, you know, even New Japan, for crying out loud. They've got television on Access Television. Now, I don't know how many people have Access Television, but that's a national cable channel. It's not only syndicated in certain markets. They need TV. Because without it, none of this other stuff really matters. It's fun for the hardcore fans who will go to the shows, and I was ecstatic that Jarrett was able to work with them and bring Wrestle Kingdom to pay-per-view here in this country. I hope they do more things like that. But you're talking about exposing the wider audience that may be disenfranchised with WWE, even some of the more casual fans, and exposing them to these new styles and you know, these different promotions. You need TV. That's just the reality of it. One last audio question here. I believe this one comes from John in Florida.
John here. Just wanted to thank you so much for inspiring me to do my own podcast. And every Sunday, it's a blast listening to your show. Which WrestleMania match sounds appealing to you? Austin versus Punk or Taker versus Sting? What would be the more star power match in your opinion? Thanks, Solomonster.
Austin versus Punk. All day, all night, Austin versus Punk. I mean, you talk about star power in wrestling. I mean, Steve Austin, one of the biggest names of all time. CM Punk has been one of the most talked about names outside of wrestling. Austin's done movies. He's hosting multiple TV shows. He's got a weekly podcast. Punk just signed with UFC. He's been the media darling now the last couple of months. To me, it's a no contest. You know, Undertaker is a hermit for all but one day each year, and Sting is not too far behind. He's out of the public eye most of the time, hanging out in the rafters or whatever he's doing. And plus, as much as I'd like to see Sting and Undertaker go at it just once, just so we could say, you know, they had a match, as a match, which of the two would be better? Austin versus Punk or Undertaker versus Sting? Austin versus Punk, right? Without question. It would blow away Sting and The Undertaker. And then the promos, you factor promos in. I mean, come on. So I don't think it's a fair fight. I think Austin Punk wins handily. Mike from the Bronx. Mike was actually the very first person who gave this podcast a review in iTunes all those years ago. He is one of the hardcores. In the 40-man Royal Rumble in 2011, there was a brief moment when the audience thought Santino might actually win. A similar situation occurred during the Elimination Chamber the year after, when Santino got a tremendous pop delivering the Cobra to Daniel Bryan, nearly pinning the World Heavyweight Champion. I remember that. That was actually a lot of fun. My question is, let's say Santino did win the Rumble. Could they have tried to build up a more realistic way with him being the once comedy figure, now underdog, in hopes of winning the big one? I wouldn't expect it to be a long run, but I honestly feel the crowd could have been behind Santino in matches in which he wins by pure luck, only to face a bigger star who flat out tells Santino all of his wins were flukes and that his luck has run out. Could WWE have transformed Santino into more of a real superstar? No. No. That role that Santino was in was the perfect role for him. He's been at the intercontinental level, so could he go higher than where he was? Yes. But what you're talking about is basically making him into a main eventer. And the problem with that, well, there's two problems, really. Number one, he was already established by that point for years as a comedy figure. So when you're branded a certain way, even if you're not a comedy figure, look at a Jack Swagger. It's very hard for me, as talented as he may be, and he's a big guy, good wrestler, it's difficult for me to envision a scenario where I could take Jack Swagger seriously as a main event player that fights for the WWE Championship. And he's the victim of what a lot of guys are the victim of, the dreaded start and stop push. So that hasn't helped him. He got as high as the world title for a few months on SmackDown, but that was 4 years ago. And the stuff with Rusev, and we all know how that turned out. So what we saw there is there are people who will cheer for the guy if you give them a reason to, but I can't see Jack Swagger being taken seriously by anybody as a serious threat to the world championship because he's been at a certain level for so long and he's gotten the start and stop pushes. And Santino is the same victim. He's the same kind of victim as everybody else. Not so much the start and stop, but he's been branded at a certain level. And it's been so many years now. We're not talking 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, Santino's been around doing this thing since 2007. There's no way. There is no way beyond one great pop in a building, maybe when it actually happened, and it would be more of a, holy shit, I can't believe that just happened kind of reaction. And then people would wake up the next morning and go, fuck, Santino is the world champion. And they would laugh. So, no. I don't think that would work. I don't think that would have worked then. He got a great reaction in that chamber match when it came down to him and Bryan. People really wanted to see him pull it out. He was the underdog, you know, in that match. But you're saying, well, maybe he gets a short run and this and that. No. No. I don't see that working at all. And here's the other reason why it wouldn't work. He's not very good in the ring. He's really not. In fact, he's pretty bad. Santino is really not a good wrestler at all in between the ropes. He's good at his shtick. He knows his character. He's got it down pat. He's one of the funniest guys I've seen ever on WWE television, but he's not that good. You know, some guys are just not meant to be in that upper position, and he's one of those guys. Asanta from Cleveland, Ohio. Two questions. What would you think of a Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan match at WrestleMania 31? These two are very talented in the ring, and I think they both deserve a match where they can showcase their true abilities on the grandest stage. Also, since everyone is saying WWE is trying to make Roman Reigns this new Superman, why not make him Batman? He already has the dark attire, he's more of a stay quiet kick-ass type. Well, apparently not quiet enough. Cena could just continue to be Superman, where they both butt heads from time to time, possibly leading to a match at WrestleMania. Superman versus Batman, main event. After the match, whether Reigns wins or not, he will continue to be this Batman-type character. What do you think? I don't know where you're going with this whole Batman thing. I really have a tough time, for example, picturing Roman Reigns wearing the bat ears. Although I do think Tyson Kidd wears the cat ears quite well with his little cat hoodie. He makes it work. Roman Reigns is Batman. I would lay off the comparisons. Not every dark, brooding type is Batman. Batman vs. Superman is not a main event I think people are looking to see in WWE, given who's involved. So I would steer clear of the Batman comparisons. But your first question, though, Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan, yeah, I mean, that'd be a hell of a match. I mean, as much as I have the match I want to see, if they do it, Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan. I mean, hell, that could be one of the best WrestleMania main events they've ever had. It's a weird thing because some of the best matches in WrestleMania history were not main events. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker had the best match in WrestleMania history. That was not the main event. Steve Austin and Bret Hart had one of the best matches in WrestleMania history. That was not the main event. Randy Savage and Ricky Steamboat, not the main event. Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, ladder match, not the main event. Okay, I could go on. And so you have, I don't want to say a pattern, but you have a lot of WrestleManias where the main event has a lot of expectations going in, and then I don't know if it's nerves, I don't know if it's the fact that by the time you get to the main event, you're kind of exhausted by all the other matches you've seen. I mean, last year, I will say that three-way match was excellent. Was it the best match on the entire show? It may have been, actually, the Bryan, Batista, Orton three-way. It may have been. Plus, the story they told, it was a great moment. But I feel like there's been a lot of main events that have really disappointed. You could say Rock Cena, although I don't know what my expectations were going in. I just remember feeling like that's it. That kind of let me down. John Cena and The Miz had no business being in a main event a few years ago. That was a joke. Triple H and Randy Orton, to me, was just a big letdown, you know, at 25. I guess Undertaker and Edge, a lot of people seem to like that match. I never really looked back on that match as being anything special, but I've also never watched it since that night. That's a match I have to go back and watch again one of these days. The point I'm trying to make is that Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan, I think, would definitely buck that trend. I think those two would go out there. If you give them a good 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, they would have one of the greatest matches that we've ever seen in WrestleMania history. That's how talented those two guys are. So, I mean, I'd be an idiot if I sat here and told you I didn't want to see that match. I would love to see that match. And could it happen? Yeah, I guess it's possible. I don't think it will. But I certainly wouldn't pout about it if they wanted to go in that direction. John from California was watching the 2001 Royal Rumble on the network. To me, it's another underrated Rumble event that does not get talked about much. I love the Rumble match itself, but always felt The Rock should have been the last one to be eliminated by Steve Austin and not Kane. With Kane and Austin the last two in the ring, it was predictable who would win. As much as I respect Kane's Iron Man performance that year, do you think it should have been The Rock as the last one eliminated by Stone Cold? I would have thought the Royal Rumble that year would have been the perfect seed to plant for their eventual feud at WrestleMania. No, you know, and I'll tell you why. Austin had just come back from neck surgery. Only a few months earlier. I mean, he was already back a few months by that point, but he was still getting his bearings back and getting used to being back in the ring. And they were telling the story that he had to win the Royal Rumble to go back to WrestleMania to get a shot at the championship. And so he was the top babyface in that match. If it comes down to Rock and Austin, you know, Rock was the other top babyface. I don't know, I'd be a little worried that maybe, you know, Rock would take a little bit of the shine away from Austin. Or I would just be worried that Rock would be completely booed out of the building, and yet he's supposed to be one of the top babyfaces in the company. If they had a sense that it was going to be Rock and Austin at WrestleMania, that might also prevent me from wanting to end the Rumble with the two of them, because I want to save that for Mania. You know, I don't want to give that away at the end of the Royal Rumble. But I think the whole babyface dynamic would have had more to do with that. I don't think it would have done them any favors to possibly split the reaction. You know, you want Austin to be in there with a guy that you know when Austin dumps him out, that place is going to come unglued. And they did. As soon as Kane went over the top rope and hit the floor, the place went nuts. So it wasn't like 1998 when it came down to Austin and The Rock. Rock was a heel. It made more sense to do that. So I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, look, it's something I don't think about very often. This is kind of a random thing, I think, to have issue with, but it doesn't bother me at all. You know, they gave Kane the Iron Man record. I think that was when he set the record until Roman Reigns broke it last year of the most eliminations in a single year. I actually was kind of pulling for Kane by the end, to be honest with you. He had been in there since the beginning. When he got dumped out, it was like, ah, poor guy. So I think that was probably the rationale behind them not putting Rock in that spot. They just didn't want Austin to be the one dumping him out. And Rock came back the next month and won the championship from Kurt Angle. So, I mean, I don't know. To have Austin dump out The Rock, maybe would have made sense in terms of the story heading into WrestleMania. Hey, Rock, you're the champion, but remember, I dumped you out of the Rumble. Yeah, I guess that could have worked, but I know why they didn't do it. Last question here. Enrique from Dallas, Texas. What caused Don West to leave TNA? I always liked his commentary, and he always seemed like a really cool dude, down-to-earth guy, but I remember once Taz came in, it seemed to begin his being phased out. Well, I think you answered your own question right there. I'd have to go back and check the timeline if Don West was pretty much booted out around the time Taz came in. If not, it was shortly thereafter. I think that probably had a lot to do with it. They took him off commentary, and I think he got a job with the Wenatchee Wild. I still remember that because it's just a bizarre name. I think it's a minor league hockey team somewhere in Washington, maybe Washington State. So that's where he is. Last I checked, like on his Twitter, I think he was still, I don't know what his role is, if he's an announcer, if he's a front office guy there, but he's doing work with the Wenatchee Wild and seems to be having a great time. Look, I met Don West a whole bunch of times when he was working with TNA. You will not find a guy that works harder at his job than Don West. Don West is so awesome at selling stuff. I mean, he could sell ice to an Eskimo. And I saw him in action at a lot of TNA shows outside the venue. The guy was red in the face. He would not take a breath to stop talking. He was always in sell mode. I thought he was going to keel over and had a heart attack. I was concerned for his health. It looked very unhealthy. But the guy was always on. And he had his brown bag specials, which I think was one of his ideas. And I think TNA did very well with those brown bag specials where it would literally be a brown bag and he would pick out different pieces of merchandise, DVDs and shirts, put them in the bag, and I think they sold them for like $20. That was all him. You know, that was his idea. He came from that background. You know, I knew of Don West well before he ever ended up in TNA, going back to the 90s when he would be on the Home Shopping Channel. Or QVC. It was one of those channels, and he would be selling baseball cards. I still have memories of Don West being on at like 2 o'clock in the morning selling baseball cards. Mint condition! And I don't know if it's still on YouTube. I hope it is somewhere. Maybe somebody can find it. There was a classic video of him on the Home Shopping Channel doing one of his shows where he was selling baseball cards, which supposedly were in mint condition. I don't know what he was doing, if he accidentally bumped into them or if he was like trying to adjust one of them that were on the display. He knocked the whole display over. Like a house of cards literally just fell apart. But he didn't miss a beat. I mean, he kept going, and if you talk about calling an audible, he kept going. The camera, I'll never forget this. So the camera is showing like where the cards used to be, but now the cards all fell on the floor, so you don't see anything. So they have to adjust the camera, and they put the camera down, and there's Don West on his hands and knees on the floor, literally swimming in baseball cards. Never skipped a beat. The guy was awesome. And he was always nice to me when I met him. I got a photo with him and everything. But the hardest working guy, it was something. It was something to see this guy in action. And I always felt that TNA letting him go, like even if he got an offer from another team, I'm sure if they would have been like, Don, we love you, you're very valuable to this company, which I'm sure he was. I'm sure the minute he left, their merchandise sales tanked. Wouldn't shock me at all. He did something that TNA has never been good at on its own, which is promoting themselves. He was promoting TNA. He was promoting TNA merchandise. And that's something TNA, it's always been a weakness of theirs. So if I were them, I would have made him an offer to stay, and I'm sure he would have. He seemed to be enjoying himself. When Don West first came to TNA, he was also an announcer with Mike Tenay. He was terrible. He was yelling and screaming, and then Mike Tenay felt like he had to compete with him, so Mike Tenay would start yelling and screaming, and soon they were yelling every week. It's like, why are you yelling? But over time, Don West got better, and I thought when they booted him from the announce booth, ironically, by that point, he was actually really good, and I was sad to see him go. And then they wanted to make him a manager, so there's this period in TNA history where Don West, of all people, was managing Amazing Red. But you know what? As a mouthpiece, as a manager, I remember him being really good. And somebody there must not have liked the idea that, oh, this guy's getting over. We can't have that. And they put the kibosh on it. And that was the end of Don West's very brief career as a wrestling manager. I think he had potential. I think everything he did in TNA, he had potential. And he got better at it. And he sold a ton of merchandise, and they let him go. How do you let somebody like that go? So I think that was kind of the beginning of the end for him in TNA. And it's funny, too, because Don West was actually joking about this a couple of years ago on Twitter. He must have gotten a royalty check from TNA. So he had gotten his latest, or maybe his last one, his last royalty check. And yeah, he's never done, I don't think Don West has ever really like done a shoot interview, like bashing TNA or Dixie Carter or anything like that. But a little bit of that came through here. So he gets this royalty check, and he made a comment to the effect of, somebody asked him, like, oh, for how much? How much was it? And he's like, well, put it this way. My old brown bag specials were worth more than this check. And I just thought to myself, that's so sad. That's so sad. No wonder he left. He wasn't getting paid. That's why he left. That's the story of TNA's whole existence. They let AJ Styles go. Why the hell would they keep Don West? If you have questions, you can keep emailing them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. If you want to submit an audio question for the show, you can do so in MP3 format. Keep it around 30 seconds or so, please. Hit me up on Twitter. @Solomonster is my handle. I will be live tweeting during the Royal Rumble tonight, as I do on Monday nights during Raw. So @Solomonster is the place to go for that. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster. I'll be getting a Royal Rumble bonus video up exclusive to the YouTube channel sometime on Monday afternoon. Again, head over to podcastawards.com and nominate the Solomonster Sounds Off under sports. And put your name and email in there as well. Again, you can submit one nomination. The nomination process is open until February 2nd, so you have a little bit of time. But please take 2 minutes and help nominate us on there. Thank you again to everybody who voted for us in the Wrestling Radio Awards. We'll find out how that turned out later in the week. And big week for us on Stitcher. Keep streaming us on there. Solomonster Sounds Off on Stitcher. Even if you only listen to part of the show, every little bit helps. And you can also drop us a review and a star rating on Stitcher, which helps the show out a lot as well. We will be back with a Royal Rumble review on YouTube this Monday, a brand new episode of the Sound Off number 366 next weekend. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you for all of your support. And I guess we will see you after the Rumble on Monday. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
They give us the dreaded fuck finish. Lame, lame, lame. You want to do the finish where the guy gets DQ'd for kicking ass? How about not doing it with your Intercontinental Champion? How about that? Some of these matches will go 10, 12, 15 minutes only to get a fuck finish or no finish at all in the end. If WWE insists on fucking the fans over so many times, the least they can do is buy us dinner first.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.